The following program is intended as an educational program, not as investment advice or as a recommendation to buy, sell, or participate in any investment vehicle, product, offering, or strategy. Investment advisory services are offered through Turning Point Financial, a registered investment advisor. Any references to specific securities, investment vehicles, or strategies are intended only as examples, not as recommendations. All investments involve risk, including the possibility of losing money.
What if your financial goals and your deepest convictions were perfectly in sync? Welcome to episode 104 of Money and Mission, here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles.
And I am Eric Terrio.
I'm James Good.
Yeah. Yep. You know, we're surrounded by so-called financial advice every day. But how much of it actually helps you become who God wants you to be? Well, today, we're going to bridge the gap between your bank account and your heart's calling.
That's right, with some really exciting stories.
Really exciting.
Too. That's right. And before we do that, though, we want to just break down and share some financial headlines, hopefully with clarity and focus. Last week, Joe, you told me that it put you to sleep.
Exactly.
Exactly. Exactly.
Went over his head.
Yeah. Yep. Well, when the cost of living goes up, that, you know, we don't care what the reasons are. It just happens.
It does.
That's exactly right. Well, but then we'll spend the rest of our time diving deep into principles and practical strategies. Actually, today and next week, it's going to be some really exciting stories.
That's right.
That probably will give you some ideas and maybe stir your imagination about how you can manage your wealth with a clear conscience and kingdom focus.
Yes, that's right. Great stories, great guests. But before we get into that, James, let's take a look at some of those news headlines and see what's happening in the world around us.
So I think one of the big stories is AI.
Oh.
Artificial intelligence.
Still rearing its head.
So it doesn't seem like this is going to go away.
No, I think it's here to stay.
Like here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think we're kind of in like the pre-internet time where we know something's coming. We just have no idea what that's going to look like in a few years.
Or how, yeah, like how fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like it changes so fast. But what's happening, one of the things, Meta, every time I look at Meta, I think, what is that? Well, it's Facebook.
Yeah, we all know that. Right. It's Facebook, yeah. Instagram, all those things.
So according to the article here, The Verge, that's the website, theverge.com,
mm-hmm.
reports that Meta...
It was a paywall from the Wall Street Journal, so we had to get it from The Verge.
That's right, yeah. They are laying off thousands of people, 8, apparently. 8,000.
And that's no small number. It's like 10% of their workforce.
And the reason they're doing this is to offset AI investments.
That's right. They're calling it an organizational restructure.
An organizational restructure.
AKA use AI, not people.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was in a meeting yesterday, a study group that I participate in, and the presenter noted that probably within 3 years, artificial intelligence would have absorbed every software-related task out there. Like, you just don't need people to do that anymore if artificial intelligence can do it for you.
Just like the computers back in the World War II era, right? They
right.
were actually individuals crunching numbers,
mm-hmm.
and now we just use a tool to do it much quicker.
Now it's all on my phone.
Mm-hmm. So it won't replace the people on the relationship side or connecting all the dots, but a lot of that number crunching, data entry,
yeah,
that will definitely be sped up with tools.
That's right. And when thousands of people... The interesting thing is that as thousands of people are replaced in payroll... like, let's say that those payrolls really don't get replaced. Have you thought about the impact that has for, like, income to the Social Security Trust Fund?
Like, or the local government.
Or local governments. Mm-hmm. Or the U.S. Treasury. I mean, that is thousands, millions of payroll dollars that are no longer funding some of those tax checkbooks.
And that's just one company.
That's just one company.
Mm-hmm.
So artificial intelligence is a really, really big deal, and it is having a bigger and bigger impact. And it's here to stay, right? I mean, we can say, we can bemoan, you know, the issue, but it's...
But they're spending so much money. Everyone's investing heavily in these data centers, all this technology. They're mm-hmm. saying this is intended to offset the increase in capital expenditures
mm-hmm.
Because they're aggressively seeking out AI dominance in their field.
Yeah.
Not only are they laying off 8,000 employees, but they've canceled 6,000 open job openings and reassigning 7,000 existing employees into new AI-focused roles.
Wow.
So about 20% of the entire company is being affected by this.
It's being affected. It's enormous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would say they're kind of going all in.
That's right.
If this was a game of poker.
That's right. They're all in.
They're throwing all their chips on the table.
Yeah. Well, I saw this article at Reuters. Do you know what quantum computing is?
High level. I do. I'm not a computer scientist.
What's quantum computing?
Well, quantum computing is where it's not relying on regular electrical currents, and you're going off of quantum, using small atoms to where it can be over here and over here at the same time, and
yeah.
all the quantum physics stuff that goes into it.
That's right.
Really, what it means to the normal person is super, super, super fast compared to a regular computer.
Yeah. Like a regular computer is really fast. But
this is really fast. Yeah.
Faster.
Mm-hmm.
Like quantum.
Now we're talking about quantum superimposing fits. Photons. And
that's right. Yeah. Quantum computing. Try defining quantum without using the word quantum. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the point of this article was just to say that the United States government is apparently awarding $2 billion in grants to 9 different quantum computing firms as part of a strategy to secure the domestic supply chain.
Well, the government's seeing that we're falling behind the curve.
Mm-hmm.
There's other competitors in the world that are kind of getting ahead of us with yeah. quantum computing. And they don't have as much regulation in certain cases. And they're just firing full steam ahead. And I think we're trying to play some catch up here.
Yeah. But I think what really caught my eye was that in exchange for this funding, in exchange for these grants, the U.S. government is saying it will take an equity stake in the companies that receive the grants.
And that means ownership, people.
Yeah. Now, that's not a grant anymore. If you hand out a grant and in exchange you take an ownership position, I mean, how is that a grant? To me, that would be, hey, just, we just bought some...
It's just private equity.
That's private equity. That's exactly right. Well, it may be consistent with the administration's broader approach to investors in critical sectors like chip making and rare earth mining and so on and so forth. But it is also, I don't think it's completely unprecedented, but, you know, when the government starts taking ownership positions in different companies, there's a kind of a fundamental shift mm-hmm. going on in the way this system is working.
Mm-hmm.
It's not capitalism anymore. I think we're actually pretty far away.
Call it a free market.
That's right. Yeah, it's not a free market anymore. Anyway, but so stay tuned. We will see exactly how that works out, and we'll try to track that story as it unfolds.
Yeah, that should be interesting. I think they were talking about that with the chips and also with like oil.
Yeah.
Different ways to kind of get equity
That's
in
right.
there.
Yeah. Well, Friday last week, bond yields spiked up enormously. In fact, the yield on the 10-year treasury is now up almost 8% year to date.
So is that good or bad?
Well, not so good.
Not so good.
Not so good. because when bond yields spike, because bond prices go down. Bond prices go down when a lot of people are selling bonds. So the question is, who is selling so many bonds that it would push prices down? Who is selling so many treasuries, really, that U.S. treasuries, that it would push prices down? And, you know, this article was reported in Yahoo Finance. Yahoo is never really one of my, you know, favorite go-to sources, you know.
I just picked these because I'm not paying $30 to this company, $30 to the New York Times, $30 Wall Street Journal. So I find other sources that are reporting on it.
But it's a solid story because it is being reported. Mm-hmm. It's being reported in Reuters and Bloomberg and the Wall Street Journal.
I could have put it on my personal blog and it's still true.
And it's still, that's right. But the point is that countries around the world are increasingly moving their money back to their own bonds. Like Japan, for example, is one of the largest foreign holders of U.S. debt. Japan owns...
Are they the most? I think they are, but they might not be.
You know, I don't remember if China has more outstanding U.S. debt than Japan. But Japan...
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's right. That's Japan reportedly holds approximately $1 trillion in U.S. treasuries. And they are increasingly moving their money back into their own bonds because Japan has so much debt.
Well, their yields have surged. The highest level since the 1990s.
That's right. But, you know, when somebody has a lot of debt to pay off like that, like Japan has a lot of debt, one of the ways to pay off your debt is to sell some of your assets. And if some of your assets...
That would include U.S. treasuries.
That would include U.S. treasuries, right? So, you know, if some of those investors are forced to sell, that'll put downward pressure on bonds here, which will push interest rates and the cost of living, you know, becomes that much more expensive.
And the cost of borrowing.
Yeah.
Whew.
Wow. So it's a complicated topic, but it does impact us tremendously. So stay tuned for that.
Well, those are some pretty good news articles. But for now, we're going to take a quick break because we have a really, really great guest coming up and some really good stories. So let's hear from some of our supporters. You're listening to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James Good.
And I am Eric Terrio.
And we are so excited today to have back with us John Sider.
Yes.
Just say hi, John.
So good to be back.
That's right.
Yes.
As this is still radio and no video yet, right?
Working on that.
So we have to like have people actually say something. Otherwise, people don't know they're here.
Yes, I'm here and thrilled to be here.
That's right. But you are, just to kind of reintroduce, you are work with an organization called Mennonite Economic Development Associates.
That's right.
That's a mouthful.
Yes. And so that's why we call it MEDA.
MEDA. That's what I was
gonna say. It works.
They shortened it up and they called it MEDA. But just, you know, kind of refresh our memory. Why MEDA? What does MEDA do and why? What problem? I mean, is there a problem that it solves? And I'm just, okay, I'll be quiet and kind of let you talk.
Yeah. So I think at the very beginning, the problem that it was solving was that business people did not feel understood within the church. This is a Mennonite organization, and within the Mennonite church, they did not feel understood, and they did not have ready ways to serve and use their gifts to serve others and express their Christian faith. And that was the original issue. Yeah. And it may seem odd to think about that. Like, we live in a society where business is all around us and business people, and to some degree, are revered. But in 1953, when MEDA was founded, these Mennonite businessmen from the U.S. and Canada formed together because the church was not offering them opportunities to express their faith or use their gifts.
Use their gifts.
And to some degree, even the words they were using was, there was a suspicion or a skepticism that commerce could only be done as in an exploitive fashion, rather than as a full expression of your Christianity. Yeah. And so that was the founding need now.
And, you know, interestingly, I haven't done a study on this, but I would venture to guess that that thought is probably pretty prevalent throughout Christendom, that, you know, how does business turn into an expression of your faith?
Yeah. I don't think it was unique to Mennonites at all.
Yeah.
And actually, I meet with a lot of business people in my role, and some of them still say, you know, my pastor doesn't know what to do with me, you know, or, you know, there's not a lot of talk about how can commerce be a way that we serve others.
Right.
And
'cause some people are really, really good at making money
right.
and managing different financial aspects. So why not be able to live that out?
Exactly.
Helping others through their vocation and the skills they have.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, they talk about it. You know, before I took this job, I read 70 years of history of MEDA. You know, it was founded in 1953, as I said. And they actually talked about, they were kind of pleading with the church leadership to say, hey, we have a pretty good skill set. They were using words like, we know how to work under pressure. We know how to allocate resources. Mm-hmm. We know how to bring creative solutions to problems. Use us.
Yeah.
And but as good entrepreneurs, they founded their own organization.
And, you know, this is so interesting that we actually kind of have an agenda and we're off the agenda, but this is really good stuff, right?
Yep.
We do this all
the
time.
This is our favorite part.
Yeah. So, you know, we pray the Lord's Prayer, right? Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And I know the theologians don't like what I do because I stop there. And I say, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Where does that show up? Well, it shows up like when we write business plans. Mm-hmm. That is one perfect place for our Father's will to be done on earth, just like it is in heaven, right? Proverbs tells us that in the book of Proverbs, we read that when the righteous rule, the people rejoice. And that's because all of the stuff that God intended for people starts showing up in the workplace and in communities and economies all over the world. So, yeah, I didn't practice that before I said it, but I think that.
But you're right, you know, and like we said, they're really good at making money, coming up with business plans. Mm-hmm. Why waste that on just stacking dollar bills for yourself and hoarding when you could be making an impact? Because some people go to work all day, and then a little bit on Sunday or when they're off, they think about how they can make an impact. And it's like, really, every day you can through your vocation.
Yeah, that's right.
100%.
That's right.
100%.
So instead of separating then business and ministry, MEDA really works at bringing that together.
That's a great, it's
and
business
I like that.
As a ministry.
Yes.
That is a great way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, we'll talk about MEDA's international development efforts, which sprung out of that original, how can we serve Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Jesus talks all the time about serving people with less, and
talks a lot about money too.
A lot about money, absolutely. And so, that's where these business folks went. They went to the place of, let's help those with less, and let's use our business skills to do that.
Yeah.
But MEDA is as much an association of Christian Christian business people as it is an international development organization. Mm-hmm. We can talk a little bit more about that, but we have events where in the different communities where we have a lot of folks that are involved with us, people just like to get together and learn from each other and saying, look, I'm facing this ethical issue. You know, how would my Christian brothers and sisters, you know, navigate that? And
because I'm sure they've been through it too, or can just bring another perspective.
Exactly. And there, you know, there's so many, how does a Christian business person utilize AI, you know? And how do you overlay those values in today's marketplace?
That's right. Wow, that's a whole nother topic. We should schedule some time just to get together.
A lot different than a conversation from last year.
That's right. But yeah, we should schedule that, right? There's a whole bunch of things we've said we should schedule, and we could. Joe, I think we'll take up like the rest of the decade here. So
that's why we're here.
That is why we're here. Yeah. So, you know, so John, I just talk a little bit then. I mean, we're going to soon be all of a sudden out of time in this segment. Is there a story that really captures the heart of MEDA's mission?
Oh, absolutely. So I told you guys that I just got back from, well, I didn't just get back. In February, I went to Kenya as part of MEDA. And usually about twice a year, we'll take a group of folks that are part of our association and support our work that have said they'd like to travel and see the projects, see what we're doing. And so we took about 15 people over to Kenya and showed them projects in poultry, in cassava, and in fruit. And so one of the ones that really struck me was there was a poultry operation that we visited. And it was run by young teenage mothers, okay? And in the United States, if you're an unwed teenage mother, your prospects are bleak. In Kenya, it's 10 times more difficult and challenging. And so a group of women got together to get some young teenage mothers involved in the poultry business. So started them with hens, and the hens have eggs, and they can sell the eggs, and it provides a little income for the family. Well, it just grew and grew. They started with 50 hens. What we saw was 3,000 hens.
Wow.
In three different buildings. They've diversified into beehives, and the one woman got up and talked to us about it, and she said she had, you know, had been a young teenage mother. And she said the first thing we did after we had enough for ourselves was we reached out to others to bring more in. None of us would think they have enough. Okay, we our standard of what's enough. But their idea of what surplus was amazing. And so now they're using their funds that they're making through this operation.
That allows them to scale so quickly.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And there's a huge demand for poultry. But anyway, they're using that extra to send 12 girls to school, and they've sent one to university. And so what it just said to me was the giving that, you know, we do for MEDA, it then gets compounded. Because it springs the generosity out of others.
Wow. Well, that's a great story.
That's a good story to start off with here.
It's an awesome story to start off. That's right. How do you follow that up, right?
Yep.
But it is almost time to shift gears, isn't it?
That's right. We're about out of time in this segment, so why don't we go ahead and do that, James? And let's switch gears to your favorite part of the show.
That's right.
It's time for PA Trivia.
Well, it's time for my favorite part of the show. That is Pennsylvania trivia.
Yay.
Last week's trivia question, what Pennsylvania city operates under a home charter or a home rule charter and is home to the first baseball stadium in the nation to be built with concrete and steel? And the answer is Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Well, the first baseball stadium with concrete and steel, huh?
To be built with concrete and steel.
It's not just wooden benches.
That's right. We should do a little search. What were they built out of before?
Right, exactly.
Legos.
All right, folks. So our puzzle for this week is that Pennsylvania is home to the oldest continually operating golf course in the United States. It has been in operation since 1887. Pennsylvania is home to the oldest continual operating golf course in the United States. It has been in operation since 1887. What is this place called?
Yeah, if you think you know the answer, send your answers to radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com, and we will read the correct answer on the podcast next week.
That's right. Well, now we need to take a quick break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James Good.
And I am Eric Terrio.
And we are talking today with John Sider from MEDA. And you're still with us.
I'm still here.
Giving good stories.
I didn't run out the door.
That's right. And
we have a couple segments left. We'll see.
Okay. That's right. We'll see if anybody runs out. But Mennonite Economic Development Associates, and what a great story you shared with us about that small business that just grew and really is now impacting the lives of so many people in Kenya. And, you know, we talked a little bit about businesses getting together and how business as a ministry, right?
Mm-hmm,
And so I think, you know, let's
not just ministry on the side, mm-hmm. but that is your full commitment.
Focal point, yeah.
That is
your North Star.
So you know, let's maybe spend a little bit of time talking about this whole thing of business development, the deployment of capital, right? And our faith convictions as well, and moral responsibility.
How they intersect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if so often we separate that and we say, over here's our faith and our convictions, and now over here, well, it's Monday morning, and now it's back to business as usual, mm-hmm. then something really gets lost in that equation, mm-hmm. right? And but bringing that together is foundational in MEDA's mission and changing mm-hmm. the world around us too. So, mm-hmm. so, you know, maybe as we get into this here, here's a question, I guess. How do we think people of faith should really think about capital, about investing in economic opportunity? Just maybe from the perspective of MEDA and how MEDA mm-hmm. kind of sort of answers that question.
Well, I would be very hesitant to tell other Christians what to think.
Right.
I'll just
fair enough.
Say what I think.
Mm-hmm.
So capital, knowledge, mm-hmm. Business networks, these are just tools, right? Mm-hmm. And they're not necessarily Christian tools. Mm-hmm. They're tools you talked about on earth as it is in heaven. They're earthly tools.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, they can be used for immense good. And the purpose of MEDA is to create business solutions to poverty. Mm-hmm. That's our tagline.
Business solutions to poverty.
Yes. Okay. Like many Christians, we find poverty to be an intolerable condition.
Mm-hmm.
It is not something that a Christian trying to be a disciple of Jesus can tolerate as a situation for our fellow people, whether they're Christians or not.
Right, right.
And so we need to do something about it. And MEDA is how business people mm-hmm. Try to do something about it. But mm-hmm. when you think about it, the tool of enterprise is actually the only self-perpetuating, self-reinforcing positive reinforcement means to address poverty.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say it's self-perpetuating.
Yeah, self-reinforcing.
Reinforcing.
When you create these enterprise systems, mm-hmm. and they that wheel starts spinning,
right.
pretty soon it's spinning on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to be feeding it entirely. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a difference between charity, which is important mm-hmm. and meant to alleviate suffering,
mm-hmm.
with development. And development is meant for jobs, income, economic growth.
And that's the only way that happens. Because even if you're saying, let's look at it from the other perspective of just giving, that's still coming from the enterprise and the growth of other folks. I mean, and once you give it all, it runs out. So you need to have that sustainable for that market.
Exactly. If you are simply addressing a need mm-hmm. and, you know, just for that day, what happens tomorrow?
That's right.
You know, and how do you create a sustainable solution? Well, it would not surprise anybody. Business people believe mm-hmm. enterprise right. is that solution.
Yeah. So in your experience then, just from what you've been with Meta for...
Not that long. Coming up on a year now.
Right.
Yeah.
I think you were in banking before, weren't you?
I was in finance. I did a variety of different things. Commercial banking was one of them. And then I joined a microenterprise organization. Then I ran a venture capital fund of funds out of the state of PA, and then worked for a publicly supported venture fund for the last 15 years.
Yeah. So a little over a year?
Just under a year.
A year. Yeah. Now with Meta, yeah. So in your experience then, and what you've seen so far, what happens when communities then gain access to this capital and this business development, right, that you said pretty soon it takes on a life of its own? Right?
Yeah, it is tremendously empowering.
Mm-hmm.
And if, you know, we're having fun today and we're laughing and joking, but there's some very serious pieces to the human condition, particularly when poverty is involved. Mm-hmm. We had a speaker at our convention. We have a convention once a year,
right.
a couple of years ago, who was from West Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And she was reminding us, there's a generation of young men at the bottom of the ocean because they were trying to migrate from West Africa into Europe for jobs. They were that desperate. And we would hear from time to time, these boats get overloaded. They're never meant to go that far. And these people drown because they're so desperate for opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, in all people, we want agency. We want to be empowered. We want to be able to provide for our families. We want to have a future.
Right.
And that's no different anywhere around the world.
And in poverty, they're so susceptible to other issues and challenges. I'm sure drug addiction, sexual exploitation.
Right.
And I'm sure when you lift them out of there, you're taking them out of a lot of those situations as well.
Yes, absolutely. And we see it in migration of people all around. They're seeking opportunity. And so the solution is for them to have opportunity where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say giving people agency because they now have opportunity,
right.
They blossom.
Right.
They blossom.
Yeah. And it just, it literally becomes a generational paradigm shift.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's, you know, each of you think back two or three generations in your family,
mm-hmm.
in many, if you're from central Pennsylvania, like I am, we all go back to the farm, right?
Yes, that's right.
And Meta, this is, you know, we believe agriculture is foundational to every mm-hmm. economy. But if you think two generations ago, my grandfathers were both in poultry,
mm-hmm.
okay? A generation before that, they were production farmers, but then they got into poultry. Well, then my one grandfather diversified into real estate and had other businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other grandfather, his sons, one was a PhD mathematician, another was a medical doctor, another was a captain for Air Canada. So
they all had that foundation.
That's yes. where it starts. Mm-hmm. You're starting opportunity. And not everybody has to stay in agriculture, but those poultry those little poultry operations, that's where all that started.
Yeah.
Because they could provide for their family.
Yeah.
And a lot of those young women I've seen on your website, you know, they've been doing these jobs for years. They have these skills. But I've seen the high percentages of young women who just aren't able to own land or get decently compensated. So doing it all their life for other people, but being able to do it for themselves and their community now and take ownership and agency of that.
So I'm so glad you brought that up, Eric. We actually have a project that just concluded in Central America. And one of the things, so we collect a lot of data on impact. And we weren't going after this, but the participants in our program, the incidence of teenage pregnancy went down incredibly.
Yes.
Like, and so there are many, many positive when people feel like they have something of their own, they have something to grow, they have an opportunity.
A lot more skin in the game.
A lot more skin in the game.
Just showing up for a job that you hate.
Exactly. Well, and maybe also you're able to feel a little bit more confident to push away things that are not so positive.
That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a question that's just like front and center in my head here. And that is this word that we struggle with sometimes, I think. Profits.
Mm-hmm.
Does Mita view profit as compatible with faith-based values?
Yes, absolutely.
That's a good question.
Like any tool that we talked about, or it can be exploitive, it can be extractive, but profit is the nature of what makes enterprise sustainable.
Mm-hmm. And to get to the next level of the mission.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, like we said, if we think about Central Pennsylvania two or three generations ago, and we see all the growth that has happened and all the increased opportunity in those generations, that sprung from profits.
Yeah.
And so it's not to say profit is necessarily all good or all bad, but it's absolutely what makes an enterprise sustainable.
Yeah.
And it's from which it's the profit that the folks that Mita works with, that's their income.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So
I've thought for a number of years now that profit really is all about margin, right? It's
no margin, no mission.
Yeah. It's but God made the world this way.
Yeah.
Margin is all around us. Trees drop seeds, and inside of the seeds is the life that turns into a new tree.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when God created the world, he did not create the world in such a way that it consumed everything. There was always some left over for perpetuating that growth cycle.
Boy, that's the cycle.
That's a powerful illustration. That's exactly right. I actually had a friend tell me a few years ago something really funny when, you know, I was at the firm. That he said, you know, John, business is easy. All you got to do is figure out how to make a dollar for 50 cents. And, you know, that's margin.
That's exactly right. That
other 50 cents.
That's exactly right.
That's what enterprise is.
Yeah.
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 Well, that's
so powerful, right? That is so powerful. Margin, right?
That's right.
And the power of margin.
That's right. Well, we're about out of time in this segment. We'll pick up where we left off after this quick break. You're listening to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James Good.
And I am Eric Terrio.
And John Sider, right?
Yes. Ready for our next conversation.
That's right. We have not scared you off yet. That's so good to be chatting, John. What an exciting set of stories, initiatives really through Mita. And what's the website? It's Mita.org.
It's real simple, MEDA.org.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can't remember that, Mita.org.
Yep.
Say it 10 times as fast as you can. Right? but, you know, we kind of took out our conversation talking about margin and profits and that's just core in running any business. And as those businesses get started and up and running, as you've been saying, that it changes what's happening in communities around the globe. And it brings dignity, right? I mean, you said agency, of course. How does it? I mean, I guess it's probably hard for us to really grasp when they're to literally have no access to opportunities, and then suddenly have access.
Well, I don't think it happens immediately. It's over time. But from the very beginning, the founders of Mita, the words they actually used is they wanted to show a way for the church to help others without demeaning them. And that, to me, says creating dependence. You know, like I don't have the agency to be able to solve my own problems and create solutions for my family. And so what these business people wanted to do right from the beginning was avoid a dependency situation and also avoid I'm high and you're low. From the very beginning, so I'm talking to two finance nerds like myself.
Right.
So you guys will get this, but do you know in 1953, the first investment they made was in a dairy, and it was equity. And private equity is now ubiquitous. It's everywhere.
Right,
and people are involved in funds, and they're making investments. In 1953, that was revolutionary. And typically, you would only be lending to businesses. But when you think about what equity is, it's partnership. And so we're going to come alongside you in this dairy in Paraguay, and we're going to take the same risks you're taking, but you're going to have ownership. We're going to have a little bit of ownership.
Called skin in the game.
Exactly. And we're partners.
Yeah.
We're not, you are the lower Paraguayans, and we're the higher North Americans.
If this don't work, then we're all toast.
Exactly. We're all partners. And so maybe the way it's different in the way private equity operates is we have often, over and over again, and most recently, just last year, when we exit an equity investment, we leave some of the equity there. You know, we never harvest 100% of the return.
Right.
So,
which by itself is very biblical.
Well, and at the time, it was revolutionary.
Uh-huh.
Like, this is not, I mean, I haven't done a huge study of missions, but it's actually very progressive the way these gentlemen were approaching this, because a lot of people in missions did approach that these folks, you know, have so much to learn. They can't really be partners with us. And so
we're doing them a favor.
We're doing them a favor and listen, just do what I say and I'll take care of this dairy. Well, no, it's your dairy. And we'll be your partners. So I hope that started an answer to your question.
Yeah. I mean, I want to kind of maybe unpack this private equity a little bit, right? Because really so many of us are familiar with investments. We have mutual funds. We have ETFs.
I would say think of Shark Tank, right? The show?
Yeah.
Yes.
We own stocks. But... You know, when we own mutual funds or ETFs, I think we're one step separated from the idea that
there's an owner.
There's ownership here.
Well, you, as an owner of a mutual fund, you're an owner of what that is invested in.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola or Starbucks.
Well, you're kind of an owner because you own shares of the mutual fund, not shares. And it always I find it interesting how when people then buy a stock, like a stock of Pepsi or Coke or whatever.
Pay a little bit more close attention. Yeah.
They get something in their mail that they never got before, a proxy notice, right? And that's because suddenly you are equity owner. issues come up in the business, and the board of directors wants your vote, and and that doesn't happen when you own a mutual fund. But be that as it may, equity, right? So then, still, it's a little hard for us to wrap our heads around the fact that we own, however minuscule, a little share of this massive, massive company. Mm-hmm. Well, when the whole project gets to be much smaller, the smaller it gets, the more
matters.
Aware we are of the fact that we own. And so private equity, again, is really where this is not publicly traded. It's maybe a half a dozen partners, right? And so
all the risks might not be known.
And suddenly there is business in capital letters in a way that is not like, oh, yes, I own one billionth of a share of Microsoft or something.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's private equity. So these folks started, I mean, they started, they took an equity, an ownership position in a dairy.
Yeah.
It wasn't that they loaned money.
Right.
Right? They actually took the ownership risk.
Well, oftentimes when you're a lender, it is something of an unequal relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, like often the lender will take collateral and they sort of have you a couple of different ways. And there's nothing wrong with that. Borrowed money is often cheaper because it's less risky for the lender. But I just thought it was so interesting that they chose to invest equity on an equity basis.
That's saying
something. From the very beginning, we want to be partners with these people. And that has informed me how Meta does its work right from the beginning.
So, I mean, that's a great story. I mean, can you, do you remember how the Paraguay story turned out? I mean, they exited. they left some money in the business.
Okay.
So they didn't take it all, which I want to talk a little bit as soon as we get through how the story turned out, right? But just tell us how the story turned out.
You're not going to believe me when I tell you. So that is the Sirona Dairy, okay? That dairy was the genesis of a dairy cooperative that now produces 70% of the dairy in Paraguay.
70%?
Yes. Yes. You can look that up.
Wow.
Talk about a snowball effect. So,
well, this, exactly.
Yeah.
Compounding. You know, in your advice to clients and whatnot, you probably talk about compounding all the time.
Yeah.
Start
and
early.
That is the other thing that enterprise provides as a poverty solution is, if the business continues and they continue to invest in it, it grows and it grows and it compounding. You start with maybe, you know, five employees.
There's a dozen chickens.
A dozen chickens.
To 3,000.
To 3,000.
To 3,000 chickens.
Yes. You
That's
work
right.
hard. You know, you try to make good decisions. You reinvest. And pretty soon you have something amazing.
You have something.
70% of all the dairy produced in Paraguay.
And, I mean, is Paraguay then like a net exporter of
Paraguay, dairy? Yes, is a dairy exporter for the surrounding countries like Bolivia and whatnot.
Right.
So yeah, absolutely.
And so just an insane impact. Right?
Well, I mean, I'd
be curious of what percentage of GDP that made an impact on. Interesting to think. Yeah.
But I just love the idea that, you know, a few quiet Mennonites, you know, partnered up with some Paraguay, and like, it's just incredible.
That's
it's just
right.
absolutely incredible.
That's right. So, but I'm really fascinated by the fact that, again, not all the equity was taken out. Because typically, it feels to me like as investors, we typically will approach an equity position with an expectation that we are going to get all the profit we can. And so there was clearly a different
motive. And you're comparing different investment options too, right?
Yeah.
Well, which one's giving me more?
Which one's giving me more? That's right. I'll capitalize, maximize my investment. Clearly, there was a different motive or there was a different view of what it meant to maximize an investment.
Well, actually, so I have a quote here from that history that I read. The founders of Meta. What they said was, we are furnishing the capital to do so out of a desire to have our abundance make up for what others lack.
Mm.
Wow.
So they
to have our abundance.
Yes. So they made profits in the many businesses they were involved in North America, U.S. and Canada, and that they started this investment pool to go then into these communities that have a lot less, and they wanted to use their abundance to give the opportunity for others. And I think that might get back to kind of your original, you know, discussion, which is...
They weren't in for it. They had their money already.
Exactly.
They were here for impact.
Well, and also, like, what...
Understanding that they need to make money, though.
Your faith and your relationship with God, how does it inform? What do I need? What do I really need? What does my family really need? And then when I decide what's surplus...
Right.
We talk about that called the finish line.
Okay.
Where's your finish line? It might be different for you than for Joe.
Yep.
But for you and your family, where's your finish line? Enough is enough.
Right. Right. Enough is enough. That's it. What is enough? And the world tells you it's never enough, right?
That's right.
It's never enough. And that's a terribly unhappy way to live, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the book of Ecclesiastes, right? He who loves silver will never be satisfied. That is so true, right? But you know, really what we're...
We have a little under a minute left. Yep. Yeah. So
so we'll get to this in probably next week, right? But, you know, what happens when capital and business development either are connected to faith and convictions or disconnected, right? When capital gets disconnected from faith and moral responsibility, you know, what's the danger? What happens? I mean, clearly that did not happen here, right? Because these folks were secure enough in their conviction that they felt okay leaving some of that money on the table.
That's right. Well, like I said, we're about out of time now for this whole show. So if you've been liking the conversation with John, please join us again next week as he's going to stick around and we can hear the rest of his story and all about Mita. Thanks for listening this week. This is Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.